Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, April 22nd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file that you can download, print off, copy as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll get access to a completely free and private app when you click the glowing heart icon. And that app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of this tool or the variety of tools that Michael and Jeannie make available have produced a positive benefit in people's lives. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions, as well as being a factor in improving people's experience of life and their relationships. And since we know that we are all connected, every time somebody chooses to make their life experience a little bit more loving and respectful and focused on gratitude, it makes everything better for all of us. If you have any comments or questions, if you have any answers, if you have any testimonials, if you have any refutations you would like to make of what we're presenting here and studying and observing for ourselves, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. Or alternatively, you can send an email to tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And we will do our best to address those comments or questions or discussions or testimonials in the internet show and then send you an email and let you know what day and time we were able to do that, and you can listen to the response in the archives. So I am all over the place this morning. I had to scramble here at the last minute and find a different way to call in because the usual headset was not working. So thank you, whoever is raising a hand. Is this Doug?
Hey, yes, it is.
Well, welcome. How can we support
you
today?
I wanted to chat about kind of an extension of some of what you were talking about yesterday and probably will again today about all events are neutral in regard to how do we reconcile that with what I would call natural law or the order of things that is that if humanity lines up with it, things go better. If humanity doesn't line up with that, things go worse. Or, again, that's a judgment. So, you know, it kind of gets me caught in a loop of, well, I mean, in the ideal, I guess, man's rules and laws would kind of comply with natural law. That was the original premise, I think, of this country anyway. And I feel like we've moved into a place where anything goes, anything's okay. You know, there's sort of an idea that any idea is as good as any other idea. And so then I get confused, or I'd like some help with sorting through that a little bit. How do we, for example, say, well, it's better to put gasoline in my car than water. That's a fact. I can't just say, well, then it's okay to put water in there, you know, and it gets much more subtle when it comes to human behavior. Like we have a law that, you know, stealing honesty seems to work better in society than dishonesty and stealing. So I'm just an open question around that, or like a discussion to help me understand how that works. When, and maybe it's also like the difference between assessment and judgment, but something more. So
okay, so
does that
the first
help?
Thing that comes to, the first thing that comes to me is to say thank you for the question. These are always really good clarifying questions. A lot of people have these kinds of questions and they don't ask them because they've got their own issues or they're worried about, you know, going against the grain of whatever's being talked about on this in this discussion. And so, you know, the best thing I have for you is I don't have a clue. I have no idea how to answer your question, right? I really don't. And that's one of the things that the Way of Mastery tells us to do. Understand, we don't really know anything. So then but we're here and we're having an experience and we're making choices of where to focus our thought energy, and that creates our experience of life and all that. So where should I focus my thought energy? What I have found works the best for me is that, you know, Guy Finley has one line where he says, I'm not telling you don't be responsible, don't be a good householder. What I'm saying is seek first the first excellence and then all of these other things fall in line. What is the first excellence? It's very similar to what the Way of Mastery says when it says the only relationship that holds any value in your life, in your existence, is your relationship with the forces that created you. There's another way to say this. It's in the line that comes from the scriptures in Matthew, where there's, you know, Matthew 5 and the Sermon on the Mount and stuff like that, where it says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all good things will be added unto you." It's the same message as the one relationship, the primary relationship, is the most important. And Guy Finley says, you know, if you go back and you look at the original language, not the English, like what does that mean? Seek ye first the kingdom and all these things will be added unto you. That seems to say, hey, if I find out what the Creator wants me to do and I do it, I'm going to get all this good stuff. And Guy Finley says, this has nothing to do with acquiring anything. When you go back to the source language and the idioms involved, Guy Finley offers this interpretation. He says, generate within yourself respect for, honoring, loving above all things, the rule of the divine flow of life. And it's completely equitable character. It's balanced character. And once you do that, once you put the highest value on your relationship with that energy, with your creator, with that flow of life, all of these other things that you think you want, all of those cravings and urgings and, quote, needs for those things, shall be placed in a passive position within you. So the first thing that came to mind to say when you first started asking this question was, do you remember on page 5 in The Way of Mastery, where we're reading that, in the very first lesson, it says, here's the first axiom, you create your experience of life, etc. And then a little bit later on in that same page, it says, this pathway that we're trying to talk to you about, the way of the heart, is not the way of the intellect. You're never going to figure this out. You're going to get stuck in the kind of loop that you're in right now when you ask this kind of question. When you put the intellect first. So what's the recommendation for these deep spiritual traditions? Put the loving energy first. Keep some part of your mind energy focused on the places within your energy system, your body, etc., where you feel the earliest possible warning signs of tension or anxiety or fear or anger or hurt or emotional discomfort or physical discomfort. And when that goes off, get out of your mind. Recognize that the intellect has been shoved full of trivialities, as The Way of Mastery says, and all it's going to do is give you more things to be and get upset about. And so ask to be shown. Go into the most loving space you can find. Breathe. Soften. Recognize that if you're in pain, fear, sadness, hurt, guilt, shame, tension, or frustration, your thoughts are in error. And they are what is creating your experience in that moment, and so they cannot fix that for you. So return to that loving state. Return to the questioning. I wonder how I can be a blessing to myself and others in this moment. I wonder what's mine to do here in this flow of energy that we call life or creation. That's the best answer I have for you there. Because everything else about what you were talking about is about labeling and judging. Right? Now you say, oh, it works out better. Well, it works out better for what or for who? And on what scale are you looking at? Temporarily, for the child who wants to eat, you know, the entire gallon of ice cream right before bed, if he or she is allowed to eat the ice cream right before bed, they think it worked out better for them. But then an hour later when they're sick and throwing up, they don't feel like it worked out so much better. Right? There was the example in The Way of Mastery about the difference between the way a logger looks at a tree and an environmentalist looks at a tree. And of course, we all know if we're, you know, active members of Greenpeace and we've been supporting them for years and the environmental movement, we all know that the environmentalists are right and the loggers are full of baloney. But on what scale and on what time frame? You know, jokingly, George Carlin had a line in one of his things. He said, these people who think they're worried about killing the planet, killing Mother Nature, he says, their focus is so myopic, is so out of balance. It's such hubris to think that human beings could kill nature. He says, you know, for all we know, planet Earth needed styrofoam for its next level of evolution, and so it created us so we could create styrofoam. We're as dispensable as the ants we brush off of the picnic blanket in the big picture. For all we know, that's true. And if we value ourselves and what we think, and if we value that above the loving energy, above the peace and calm, above extension of love in form, we are in error. Now, I don't know if that's right. I just know that that's what I'm getting from these deeper spiritual teachings, right? He who says he knows doesn't know. She who says she doesn't know, she's on to something.
I think you're on to something. I loved almost everything you had to say there, and it was very helpful for me, truly. It seems like that, you know, in the ideal, the more each person seeks for relationship with the force that created them, the less you would need any other kind of rules or guidance or whatever, and that any that you do establish, if you were coming from that place, would be more likely to be correct. And then moving away from that as people are more capable of just becoming their own person guided by relationship with the forces that created them and seeking first the kingdom of heaven and so on. So I'm grateful. I think that helped. It really did. So that's all I had right now, and I thank you. That's pretty good.
Well, I thank you too, and it's the idea that I don't know that this is right. I just know that in my personal application in my life, this has benefited me but beyond words. The more I recognize that if I'm in pain, I'm in error. This is one of the lines from Dr. Michael Rice's Reality Management worksheet years ago. Now, you know, he's modified it. He gets, you know, input from people at different times, and he recognized that people don't like to be told they're wrong. So now he doesn't say it quite that way. He says, if I'm in pain, my thinking is in error. And, you know, I don't know whether he thinks people will tolerate that better or if he thinks that's a more accurate statement. But the one that really helped me, the phrasing of that idea that helped me was, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. I'm doing something akin to what the Way of Mastery says, don't do. I'm relying on my intellect. And as Way of Mastery says, all my intellect can do is feed back to me all these trivialities that have been programmed into it, from my language, from my family, from my culture, from my traumas. And, you know, the other thing that comes to me to say kind of in a flow of thoughts about this is, a number of years ago, I was waking up to how many times in my life I learned something only to live another few years and discover that what I thought I knew was completely wrong. And it went through all kinds of arrays of life. The hard sciences. I remember being in grade school and high school where they taught us about the periodic table of elements. And they would say, these are all the elements in the universe. Now, later on, they discovered new elements. And then they were say, oh, we discovered a new element. And I was one of those kids that would say, wait a minute, you told us this was all there was. Well, what we meant to say was, and then they would say, okay, now they talk about these are all the elements that are known in the universe. At one point in time, they would say, these are all the elements in the known universe. And then the wiser people would say, these are all the elements that we know about right now in the universe. I remember being taught really, really strongly that the nerve in the human body is the only cell that doesn't regenerate. So when you get nerve damage, that's it. When you damage brain cells, that's it. When you lose a brain functioning, that's it. You're never going to get it back. Well, by the time I was out of college and into grad school, they were talking about, hey, guess what? There's this concept called neuroplasticity. And they would say, maybe a damaged or dead nerve cell won't come back to life, but other nerves that are there can take over the functions that were served by that nerve that got damaged or killed. And then eventually they said, oh, wait, there's this whole concept of we still grow new nerve cells. Well, that's directly against what I've been taught, that the hard science knew, that I had to memorize and spit back on tests to get a passing grade. It just kept going over and over and over again. I mean, I started looking at how many times in the history of our cultures did we have our scientists saying, this is what's the truth, only to be awakened, days or decades later with, oh, wait, that's not true. The Earth is not the center of this solar system, et cetera. So I eventually, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 10, 12 years ago, I forget, I lose track of time, but I started waking up to the fact that I'm in a much better space within myself and my urge to be right and to have consistency when I start talking about, I don't really know for sure, but this is the best I can tell you from what I think I know right now. Right? This is from all my life experiences and how it's panned out for me. This is how I operate. This is what works best for me. Is this what's right? Is this what's absolutely true? I have no idea. I have no idea. So this idea that we're talking about right now of keeping a significant amount of my mental, emotional energy all day, every day, focused on, am I feeling loose, fluid, peaceful, blissful, you know, calm, content, gratitude, appreciation? Am I feeling one of those energies, or am I feeling anything else that I would consider tight or tense or upset? When that happens, my life goes better when I take a breath, turn the focus inside myself, and ask to be shown how to restore myself to that calm, loving, peaceful space. How to breathe, soften, use whatever tools I've learned, whether it's yoga breathing or the EFT tapping or the Michael Rice worksheet or the Byron Katie worksheet or the Diedrich Wolzak worksheet, and figure out what's the source of the error in my internal processing. Because every time I'm uncomfortable, I'm in error, or my thoughts are off the mark, or I'm trying to fit the square peg in the round hole. Perception is telling me this thing ought to fit, but my perception is so limited that it is not a valid guide for those times when I'm tight or tense or uncomfortable or sad or scared or grief-filled or whatever, rage-filled. That's how I know, you know, when those energies are up, as so many of these teachings tell me, my perception is distorted. There's that line from the scriptures that says, the eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep shall your darkness become? And when you look at that in the English language, as it came down through the Latin and the Greek and from the ancient Aramaic, it makes almost no sense whatsoever. But if you go back to the original language and you know the idioms of the time, that statement is something more like, listen, your eyes, your perceptual mind, the pictures your brain creates are just supposed to be the most gross guide for your earthly life, so you don't walk off a cliff or step in an open manhole or continually pick up a hot pan that burns your hand. And if the light that you're using, in this case, light, dark, means if you're in a loving state or you're in any state other than love, if your emotional state is in anything other than calm or peaceful or bliss or loving, your lights are out. Your perception is distorted. The pictures your mind is showing you are not accurate. You're going to walk off a cliff. You're going to step in an open manhole. You're about to walk into a minefield with blinders on. Stop what you're doing when your tension is up, when your energy emotionally turns to anything that you would consider unpleasant or negative or anything less than calm and focused and blissful. Don't speak or act until you've turned the lights back on, until you've gotten back to that loving state, until you've sought first the kingdom, until you've recognized that the only relationship that truly has value for you is your relationship with the flow of life itself. And that's transformed my life. Every time I'm able to do it. And the sooner I do it, the less time I spend in the negative emotional states and the better results I get in my life. And that's what I know as of now.
That's great. How did we get to, I may know this, but I don't remember in the moment, how did we get to recognize, it's such a profound recognition, that in that scripture that you quoted, how dark shall you know, means perception is coming through love or not.
That comes from the Dr. Michael Rice's work and the team of Aramaic translators that were working with the Kabor's manuscript, and that's part of the teaching that comes from Dr. Michael Rice's work. But it comes through similar channels. Like, it's very similar to what Guy Finley came to when he said, you know, seek ye first the kingdom. Guy Finley goes back to the ancient, he calls it, you know, Aramaic, but it's Aramaic, knowing some of the idioms, and says the people that study this, whether it's Rocco Errico or these other people that study the ancient Aramaic, they know a lot of the stuff that we take as literal, even when we have a decent translation of it, it was meant to be figurative, or it was meant to be, you know, a parable, or it was meant to be, you know, an allusion to a metaphor of something. It was not meant to be literal. So that specific thing comes from the Dr. Michael Rice Kabor's manuscript translations, that foundation of translators that, for the work that they were able to do in whatever they already accomplished, which is still a work in progress, but not actively being done because there isn't money to hire the translators.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Tim. Thank you.
And, you know, I'll just say that about that, what Michael says is when they were doing that work, they would take a piece of the Kabor's manuscript and they would give it to these various translators, and they would ask them to go do their work individually to translate this segment, line, script, whatever, word. Then they would come back together and meet as a committee. And the requirements for deciding on what it meant and including it in their work with the Kabor's manuscript were the following two things. The first thing is, people had to agree in a consensus that this was an accurate translation or a valid translation, because, you know, like in America today, how many different definitions are there, or meanings, implied meanings, can you have for a word like cool? Right? There are a lot of them these days, right? Because cool could mean not quite warm, less than warm. Cool could mean, you know, something I like, and several other definitions. So they would have to say, okay, that fits, right? But the second part of it was the meaning that was derived, looking at the idioms, looking at the times, etc., would have to line up with the same loving message that was in all of the other works attributed to Yeshua, or the theme of this teaching, which was loving, which was, you know, gentle, which was focused on trust and respect and gratitude. And so those things had to be in place. So even if there's a valid way to interpret a word, but it doesn't really line up with that theme of, here's your loving creator, here's the flow of life, you're a part of it, we're all connected, then they wouldn't include it, because it probably wasn't what was intended back in the day it was spoken.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. Yes. Yeah, I just wondered if that particular... Go ahead.
And so I include that and talk about that kind of stuff, like Michael Rice talks about from the Kabor's manuscript, because I also hear it from people like Dale Allen Hoffman, and I hear it from people like Guy Finley, and I hear it in Krishnamurti's teachings, and I hear it in so many other places. I hear it from the Gangaji teachings, and I say, okay, here are people who really, really dedicate their life to this stuff, and they're all, when they all say the same thing, and they all say, hey, when I apply this in my life this way, my life gets better, I say, okay, then that's worth me trying it myself.
All right. Good. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
No, not right now. I don't think so. Thank you.
All right. Well, I thank you. As I mentioned, it's always easier to live into our intention with this work when people do what you just did, which is raise a hand and ask a question. And some of the stuff that just tumbled out of my mouth feels like I should go back and listen to it.
It was
so
good.
I appreciate the input.
Good.
I appreciate the input, and I'll go ahead and mute you if you don't have any other contribution. If you want to add something later, make sure you press one twice because it'll take your hand down and then put it up again. So, thank you and blessings.
Okay, very good. Bye.
So here we are. I don't really know what else to say or do except maybe to go back into the Way of Mastery Lesson 9, where the title of the lesson is All Events Are Neutral, and that's kind of what sparked the question from Doug. And when we're in the conscious logical mind, when we're in the intellect, when we're in the realm of existence that's been created by language and culture and judgment and comparison and competition, it really doesn't make any sense to say all events are neutral. And I understand that. I am not in the least bit trying to tell you, oh, it doesn't matter if somebody gets, what did it say in one of our earlier lessons so far in Way of Mastery? They were trying to point out that when I understand the flow of life and my role in it and how I'm creating my experience with my thoughts, even if somebody gets a whole bunch of power and money and then declares a war on somebody and kills 5,000 or 50,000 people, that's a neutral event. And then this teaching says, at the level that we're talking about this, yes, that's a neutral event. I can still find my connection to my source and my peace. And you can think about it in terms of people like Nelson Mandela, who spent 26 years in prison, or Roger McGowan, who spent, you know, 20-some years in a death row prison in Texas where he was abused regularly by the guards. And in those situations, those people chose, both of those examples, in some of the most intensely abusive, physically painful, emotionally torturous situations, those two people are just two examples. There have been many throughout history, many in our lives right now, where people are choosing love, choosing calm, choosing alignment with these higher energies rather than choosing hate, rather than choosing to value hate or value fear. It's not that they never felt any fear or pain or hurt or sadness. It's that they chose to value something else, and they chose to find a way to restore themselves to the awareness of their true nature and or to the experience of the peace that's available. And this is that thing about, you know, that's the peace that passes all understanding. What does that mean? It's a peace that you can't figure out logically how you're getting to feel peaceful in a situation where you're being actively abused. Right? And so Roger McGowan writes in his book, you know, Lessons of Life from Death Row. He says, look, everything that happens to us can be seen as a gift and a lesson. We are creating our experience always, wherever we are, in whatever circumstance or situation. There's a list of five or six things that he says in summary. Pierre Pratervan writes that he's taken from the letters that he exchanged with Roger McGowan. He said, among the many messages you'll hear throughout this book from Roger McGowan, as he's writing letters to Pierre Pratervan, from death row in a 6-foot by 6-foot by 10-foot cell, concrete everything. There's no creature comforts there except that he's, you know, being sheltered from the worst of the extremes of the temperatures of the climate. He's not like out strapped to a stake in the burning sun and the cold one, but there's no softness. There's no what we would consider creature comforts in this cell that Roger McGowan is in for 20-some years, and he's writing to Pierre Pratervan, and this is the kind of stuff that Pierre extracts from the letters from Roger McGowan. The first one is, love is the fundamental law of the universe, the reply to every situation, our reason for existing, and the essence of what we are. Love is easy. Hate is the difficult role to play. This from someone who's getting routinely abused by his guards. The next lesson is, everything that happens in life is an opportunity to learn. Way of Mastery would say, every moment of my day-to-day occurrence is an opportunity to choose to teach only love. Roger McGowan says, everything that happens in life is an opportunity to learn. Life is a school of higher learning. The next point that Pierre Pratervan takes from the Roger McGowan letters is, we can refuse to be victims. Remember the context. This guy's in a 6-foot by 6-foot by 10-foot cell on death row for something he didn't do. We can refuse to be victims, and we can take total responsibility for our lives. Even happiness is a choice to be made, whatever the circumstances of one's existence. The next point is, God, the Creator, infinite love, provides a field of infinite possibilities so each of us can create a life that is perfect for us. Please remember the context. And the last one, and this is just in the foreword of the book, everyone creates their own reality essentially through their way of looking at and interpreting events, people, and situations. So here's Roger McGowan. He's clearly decided to focus on some of the deeper spiritual teachings that he could find wherever he could find them, and then use them in a practice in his life so that he's in one of the worst situations that people find themselves in on this continent anyway, in the modern age, and he finds those key points, which I would say are loving and optimistic and powerful. So yes, there is a lot of death going on the planet. There are some nations fighting other nations. There are innocent people dying. This is true. And it's certainly not innocent. It's not neutral for those people unless they take this perspective. They understand that they're going to be creating their experience of that with the choice of their focus of their conscious awareness. even people in the worst circumstances can choose to just have pain in their life or to have suffering on top of the pain, have agony on top of the pain that's self-created. So in The Way of Mastery, Lesson 9, page 112, the top of the page, the heading for this next segment is the power of your thoughts. And I just read the first paragraph or two yesterday, so I'll just start here by reviewing this. The text asks us, never, ever believe that your thoughts are neutral. I said earlier that events are neutral, but your thoughts are not. For your thoughts literally are imbued with the power of creation. They do not create neutrally. That is, every thought reverberates a quality of vibration that spreads out from you. It touches the shores of manifested reality and comes back to you. That is what you experience as the positive and negative events of your life. Earlier, it was talking about, in Lesson 8, it was talking about how you never experience a solitary thing. You experience the effects of your thoughts of a belief in solid things as being separate from you. You experience the effects of your belief of being separate from the flow of life. The text goes on to say, now, it is very true, and it slows down here and it says, please listen carefully to this. It is very true that at any moment as you go along in your experience, as you experience the reverberation, the coming back to you of the ripples you have sent out, in that very moment, you are not a victim of what you created. Because in each moment, you remain as perfectly free as you were when you first chose that thought, when you first chose to value that thought, when you first chose to drop that pebble into the still clear pool of energy, the consciousness that is your mind, that created this energy effect that's rippling back to you in the first place. You remain as perfectly free in this moment as you were when you chose these negative thoughts and valued them days, weeks, months, years, or decades ago. In each new present moment, you are free to choose how you will respond to the effects of the choices you've made in the past, of the energies that's rippling back to you from the thoughts and beliefs you've chosen to value. The text goes on and says, and if you experience it with unconditional freedom, unconditional acceptance, and love, forgiveness, neutrality, and innocence, you literally diffuse the effects of that ripple upon the pool of your consciousness. And then, in that moment, you become instantly free to begin creating, in a new way, the ripples that you will experience in the future. And that is why you are never a victim of anyone's creation, especially your own. It is not that life is so complex that you have created all of these momentums and now you're stuck with them. Any moment that you truly understand this, you truly get it, you can stop reacting as if you are a victim. And you can look merely at the ripples that are coming back to you and that you have sent out away from yourself, and you can say, quote, this has come into my field of experience as an awesome mystery. This means that I am an awesomely powerful being and a creator. Therefore, I will look lovingly upon this ripple. Yes, it needs to play itself out. And as it does so, I'm choosing to be wise enough to see the transparency of it, to see the lack of effect that it truly has on my essence as the extension of the creative energy and form. It doesn't change who I am. doesn't add anything to my life. It doesn't take anything of value from my life. It's merely an experience called life passing through the field of my awareness, like a cloud passing through the sky, doesn't damage the sky. My life experiences, whatever they might be, do not damage my essence as a being of brilliance and light. If I look lovingly upon these energies as they come back to me, if I embrace them, I can transmute them, and therefore, I can already be engaged in the process of creating a whole different kind of vibrational ripple that will create my tomorrows. That means that while the power of your thoughts is not neutral, the events called the effects of these thoughts can be either neutral or not neutral depending upon how you use the very primary power, the creative power of the focus of your conscious awareness. We are seeking to share with you how infinitely free you are. There are many in your world that would teach the illusory doctrine of what is called karma. Karma in a form that says, what you send out now, you must experience sooner or later. And how you experience it is directly related to the quality of the ripple that you send out. In this teaching, we understand that is not true. That would make you a victim today of the choices you made yesterday. And as we said, you cannot be a victim because the Creator does not create unlike itself, and the Creator, this flow of life and creation itself, is never a victim. The text reads, if you are made in the image of the Creator, and I assure you that you are not a victim of the world you see. You cannot in reality be victimized by anyone or anything at any time because your reality is that you are made in the image of your Creator. If you could truly be victimized, it would mean that the Creator creates unlike herself. Does a salmon come from an oak tree? Does a nebula come out of the womb of a woman? Does a raspberry grow on a grocery store shelf? No. Like begets like. Therefore, why would you ever believe that the Creator, who is but love, what is but love, and unlimited creativity and power, the source of all creation, is but love, is but unlimited creativity and power, how would you ever believe that that energy could beget something that is small and little and powerless? It does not happen. Creator, creation, life itself cannot be victimized. Therefore, the Creator's creation remains a creator, remains powerful, remains victimless. All events are neutral, and all that the environmentalist and the logger are doing is using the power of consciousness to momentarily create the belief that they are this and not that. They place a value of their own upon choosing an event of energy. They create a value of their own. Actual way to say that is they place a value of their own choosing upon an event of energy that they will call a tree. It's just a flow of life. It's a nested energy within a nested energy within a nested energy, like we all are and like everything is. It's like a holon. Everything is made up of holons, and everything is a holon, a part of something greater. So they place a value of their own choosing upon an event of energy that they call a tree. And by what they value, they place upon it, they call the quality of experience they will have into their field of awareness. So whatever value they place upon the tree, that's the value of the experience they're going to create in their own awareness. That's all that's happening. Both the logger and the environmentalist are looking at the same energy field, and yet they create a dramatically different experience of the energy field and of their relationship to it and their life in the moment based on the value they place on the label they've created for it. The energy that makes up the tree is eternal forever. It may change form, but life remains. Therefore, lament not passing away of a species, but trust the grand intelligence that gave rise to it in the first place. For that intelligence is still busy creating even greater universes. This is why loss does not exist outside of the mind of the human that labels something as a loss and then generates the negative emotions about that loss. The text goes on and asks, how does all of this relate to your daily experience? As we move into the lessons that follow, it's going to become very crucial that you have a foundation upon which to build. So here's the suggested foundation. 5 minutes a day, the foundation of mastery. The text suggests if you're ready to completely assume responsibility for having been created in the image of the Creator, and that therefore you are an eternal Creator, if you're ready for that, then begin now to utilize some time each day without letting a day go by in which you sit with yourself. Period. Full stop. Sit with yourself. Not with your mate, not with your parents, not with the television, not with your phone, not with your laptop, not with your video game, not with your favorite sport team, not with your favorite actor or actress, not with your favorite religion, not with your favorite God or master or savior, not even Yeshua, not even me. Sit with you, acknowledging you are one with the forces that created you. Understand that the very body that seems to have a heart within it beating with capital L life for you is the effect of decisions and choices you have made. That the very chair you are sitting on is the result of attracting a web of relationships that is quite unique into your field of awareness called the physical universe. In this moment, you are having an experience you have never had before. You are sitting in the chair now. The event is completely neutral, and nothing that you are experiencing in your consciousness exists or is sourced by anything outside of yourself. Give yourself 5 minutes to practice choosing how you will experience sitting in the chair. Will you do so with a mind full of worry or a mind full of peace? Will you do so with a mind thinking of all the things that the mind could be doing, or a mind marveling at how the weight of the body feels pressed against the seat of the chair? A mind that creates tension in the way the breath flows through the body, or a mind that creates ease and comfort? You decide. 5 minutes of practice sitting in a chair as an infinite creator of exactly what you are experiencing in your emotional field. Just that. You might even want to play with what it would feel like to sit in a chair as a Christ. What would that feel like? I will let you choose whether or not you would like to experience it. 5 minutes each day. Do it without fail. Be with yourself and decide how you will experience yourself now. For you see, the you that sits down in the chair with whatever is going on in your consciousness, whatever feelings you're having throughout the body, whatever is going on in your primary relationships, how food is being digested in the body, all of it, the whole realm of your experience, all of it is the effect of how you have been a million times when you have sat down to be with yourself in 1,000 different chairs. It's possible for you to utilize the very process of sitting down in a chair as a symbol of preparing the mind for the dropping of a pebble into it, out of which will reverberate the vibrations or ripples that will come back to you and create your tomorrows. And it's much easier to send out ripples and experience them when they come back in a blissful way, in a way that brings peace, joy, fun, laughter, play, and unlimitedness. So choose, which type of thoughts will you value? Which type of thoughts will you drop into the still clear pool of your awareness? If you decide to sit in the chair with the full conscious awareness of your infinite capacity to create with where you focus your conscious awareness in each moment, your mind energy in each moment. So that takes us pretty much right up to the time. I thank you, Doug, for your comments and questions. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff that we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice and turn on her microphone.
Thank you. Thanks for keeping up with me.
You're entirely welcome and deserving. Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend. You too. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, April the 22nd, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And appreciate you all being patient. I know we've played a lot of pre-recorded shows in the last few weeks, and, you know, we'd much rather be on here talking with you all. It's just been a little bit unpredictable, especially with Dad. And yesterday I had to, the facility will take him to the doctors, but then I have to meet them there and then go in with Dad to the doctors. And he had a couple of skin cancers taken off yesterday. Just one more thing added to everything else that's going on for him. And he's not cooperating with physical therapy. I talked to them again yesterday, and they said that, you know, they even little things like trying to get him to sit forward, and he won't do it. And so it looks like a couple more weeks, and then they're going to actually release him, which means Dad will not be having any physical therapy or occupational therapy or anything going on, which concerns me because without somebody making him move and do some things, he's just going to become like a sack of potatoes. So hold the space. You know, insurance will not pay once they get to the point where they say that there is no improvement. And that's basically what they're saying, is that, you know, Dad's not showing any signs of improvement or anything. And so there's nothing else that we can do. So anyway, just hold the space for us. And thank you for being patient when we have to play a recording. We're actually going to have to do that a couple days next week as well. And the times that we are here, we would like for you to call in and talk to us. So, you know, dial that number and press 1. Michael's not in yet, but he'll be in here with us momentarily. I did check, and the app still hasn't been updated yet at Google or iPhone. So those hopefully by Monday. I keep saying that, don't I? But we'll get all of that squared away one of these days, and we appreciate you. And I see Susan has her hand up, so I'm going to turn your microphone on. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Jeannie. What news? Wow.
It's really, it's like at a loss of, okay, what do we do from here? I guess we just let him exist. You know, I mean, that's not living, but.
How are his emotions? Yeah. Is he anxious, or is he, and is his mental capacity coming? I know you started that coconut oil, and I told my friend, young friend, whose mother has Alzheimer's, and Michael was talking about diabetes 3. How has that worked for him?
It actually has worked really well as far as, you know, like, and I was so totally surprised that the physical therapist said yesterday that Dad wasn't cooperating because, you know, I had actually come home the day before and told Michael that Dad was the most alert and the most there that he had been in a long time. You know, I always show him pictures, you know, on my phone of things that we've been doing in Aria and the garden and stuff like that. And he talks and you know, one of the aides actually came by and looked at his thumb. And she said, you know, what'd you do to your thumb? And I said, oh, he can tell you that story. He can't tell you that I was here yesterday, but he can tell you about almost cutting his thumb off when he was a kid, you know. And so he started telling her, you know, and I said, you know, he's still got the farm. And she asked him how many cows, you know, he had. And he just talked about them being happy cows. You know, we didn't grow them to slaughter them, that once they had calves and the calves were weaned, then they did sell the calves. And the only reason they have to do that is because the bull would try to mate with the calves, even though they're his. And we don't want to inbred like that. So they do sell the calves when they are weaned. But otherwise, I mean, Dad's got some cows that are 18 years old. You know, I said they're happy cows. They just, you know, they're just there to keep the fields, you know, chewed down and stuff like that so they don't have to mow every field.
And mammalian lawnmowers. Wow.
Yeah, really. And they move them, you know, from field to field, so they're allowed to stay in one field until they've chewed it down, and then they move them into another field. And the cows, it's so funny because when Dad got to where he was just walking with a cane or a walker, he could still drive, you know, the mule or somebody else would. That's what they call it. It's a Kawasaki. It's like a, it's not really like a four-wheeler. It's safer than that. And
I see.
The cows are so used to hearing it that you can just drive up to the gate to open the gate, and all the cows are there because they know that you're going to take them to a fresh field. You know, I said a different term of driving cattle. You know, when I was a kid, we had to go there. Yeah, we had to walk behind the cows with a stick, you know, and drive them into the next lot. And so now they just follow the truck into the next field. So anyway, they're just like big pets.
Wow.
So
Where's the farm?
You know, it's in Jonesville, Virginia, which is, if you were looking at the state of Virginia, it's almost in the far west corner of Virginia. And
how
so it's
far
about
from
an hour.
You are the,
about a,
oh, yeah.
It's about an hour. And the, you know, the farm also has the family graveyard and everything. So it's like everybody in the family is buried there. And the last time that we took Dad was actually when one of my cousins passed. And then before that was when my brother passed. So, you know, mm-hmm. he even told the nurse yesterday, he was like, you know, I don't get to get there very often anymore, you know. So, I mean, he talks
yeah.
and carries on and plays dominoes and, you know, does mm-hmm. all that. And, you know, the biggest thing is that he just won't move. And but then yesterday at the doctor's office, they wanted to check he has some bed sores because he's, you know, always either just in bed or in the recliner or in a wheelchair. He's just always sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nurse got one arm and I got the other, and I said, okay, Dad, I said, you hold on. You know, the thing they usually have patients to sit up on. And I said,
yeah.
you hold on to that and stand up for us. And he did fine.
Yeah.
You know, so he just needs something really solid. And they don't have, you know, at the other facility he was at, they had this thing that kind of jacked him up and he held on to it. And then he would
yeah.
move his feet and kind of walk, but the most of his weight was being held by this thing. And they don't have it at the assisted living. So
wow.
If he doesn't cooperate and use his own strength, even though he's lost so much weight, I mean, he's just, like, so skinny now. But it's just, you know, like what they call dead weight. You know, he's just, you
yeah.
can't hardly lift him. And so, you know,
so
I don't know.
So you're going to, he won't be able to stay at assisted living anymore, then, you're saying. He'll be sent home to you.
Well, he would go to a nursing home because I couldn't handle him here.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The house is a split level, so you walk in the front door and you either walk up 6 steps or down 6 steps. You know, he can't walk at all, and so you'd have to carry him.
Wow.
So,
at this point.
Wow.
You know, but mentally, he's doing very well. I think the coconut oil, the MCT oil, is helping him tremendously there. But, you know,
great.
He just needs to move his muscles. And the more he doesn't move, the more, you know, his legs are just like appendages hanging there.
We're hoping that since he's already there and they're collecting their $6,700 a month or whatever, that they're probably not going to be in a hurry to throw him out, hopefully. But we don't know at this point how that's going to fall in place.
Mm. Wow. And who's taking
so
care
the
of
space.
The farm?
I have a cousin and an uncle, and basically, and it's a really, you know, it's a good deal. I mean, Daddy doesn't make any money off of it, but when they do sell the calves, they get a quarter of the profit each. So Dad gets
mm-hmm.
half, and then they each get a quarter, and that's their payment
mm-hmm.
for feeding them and moving them and, you know, keeping the fences up and all that stuff. So,
wow, you're juggling a lot.
Yeah.
You guys are keeping track of a lot.
And Jeannie's brother is going to have the farm when Dad leaves, and so he's involved too. He goes down and takes care of things
mm-hmm.
and keeps things on go.
And that's
wow.
when he can. I mean, you know, he's out
yeah.
of town 30 to 45 days, and then he's home for 30 or 45 days, and then he's out of town for 30 or 45. So on the days that he's here or in, well, it's actually in Knoxville, south of Knoxville, which is about 2.5 hours away. But he, you know, besides reacquainting himself with his own family, he
wow.
you know, tries to make a trip down to see Dad and to see the farm and do what he has to do.
So how are you, young lady?
I'm doing my work, Michael.
Well, that's a good
work.
Thing. I'm glad you're saying that with a smile on your face. Isn't it an awesome privilege?
Yeah, well, it doesn't – it's so weird, Michael. I don't because it's nonverbal. It's I'm accessing the junk via dreams.
Right.
And memories that are popping up. And it's like working with a puzzle. So,
well, there's a good chance,
I mean,
from the sound of it, you're working with pre-verbal stuff.
It does seem that way, but I was so, when you said and you've said it so many times, but you know, you have to keep saying it until it goes in. You said rage is an addiction. And I thought, well, I still have, it's rare, but I still get triggered to rage mostly when I bump into something. I am suddenly hit. And of course, I'm doing the hitting. I mean, a cabinet doesn't walk off the wall and come and slug you, but I might get up and bang my head, and there's a flash of rage,
right,
as if I've been hit. And I know darn well that's not true. It's like the woman who, did you tell this? No, I think I read it somewhere. The woman who got into a mess on a country road, and she ran into a tree, and she insisted that the tree jumped out in front
came
of
her.
It's the same idea.
Oh, that's the way the mind works. That's it.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
The non-being mind.
I would like to tell you a dream, and I know dreams can be so dull when people tell you about dreams, so I'll make it really fast.
They can also be very pointed.
Well, maybe. I was at a retreat center, and there was a guru there, and I was unable to listen to his talk because I was in the kitchen helping with the cooking. And at the end of his talk, a line formed. People wanted to introduce themselves and to get a blessing from him or whatever it was. And I was finished with cooking and went to the end of the line and became my turn. And I turned into my clown. I was unreal. I was a fake. I just was super friendly and silly and unconscious. And he opened his mouth to laugh, and it was like he opened his mouth into the universe. I looked into this humongo mouth, and he was laughing. And there were huge teeth that were also like the pipes on organs, and huge teeth at the back of the altar that formed this amazing mosaic of different colors of off-white and white. And around the edges were other teeth that were really human figures. And I just didn't know what to make of that, except that I recognized that I hadn't been real to him. And then he closed his mouth and looked at me. You know that story about the young man who came to Jesus and said, well, what should I do? And he looked at him lovingly. This man looked at me lovingly, and he said something that I can't remember about, it's okay now if you become real. It's okay to become real now. So I went outside, and there were a mother bear and two baby bears running in terror in the woods, running away from something, and they had blood on them. And then after them came the father bear, and he was missing a hind leg, and he was lame and limping, and I ran inside and said, you've got to shoot him dead, shoot him dead. And that's the dream. I don't know what to make of that dream, but I kept thinking that bear and rage are connected somehow. I don't know. But anyway, so if you can do anything with that, Michael, you're a genius as usual.
Were there any emotions in the dream for you, aside from this urgency to put the bear out of its misery?
No, I don't think so. I don't remember feeling I wasn't afraid of the bear. I felt badly for the bear.
Right.
He was in trouble and terrible pain, but I wanted not to have him have that pain. That's all.
Yeah. So notice the thing that you're working on is your pain that you realize is covered by this flash of rage, and that you don't want to have that pain. And is the bear a symbol of you, and do you feel like there's a piece of you missing because of whatever this is that's not resolved? And my take would be that the guru would symbolize wisdom, and the mouth would be, watch your words. You know, how many times have we said, my words fly up, my thoughts remain below? That my words, again, and your pursuit, you know, when I think about the session we did the other day on the show, your pursuit was, how do I find this unconscious dynamic? And, you know, when we spoke about forgiveness as the modality, the way to get there, it isn't a function of memory, it's a function of forgiveness to go back to the point where the original offense occurred. And it sounds like you're getting closer to that. And my take would be that the opening of the mouth is was probably, if you just take a new approach or a new level of observing your own words, watching your words, that you're going to get some clues as to, now that you're discovering the harmed part of you that doesn't feel whole. And if I think back over the years we've been working with you, you know, the perennial issue is always about how I'm not whole, I'm not good enough, I don't do it right, I'm going to flub it, you know, a thousand variations on a theme. And it sounds like you're getting closer to being strong enough. You know, bear is a symbol of strength and power, strong enough to be able to go there and to process through and watch your speaking and carry on with your work. And what I'd love to do is, if you would, is have you repeat the dream again now.
Okay. Okay.
Observe your breath.
I was at a retreat. Okay. I wasn't breathing. Okay.
I got it.
I was at a retreat center, stuck in the kitchen cooking. And there was a guru there, a very big, tall man. I didn't say that before. Who was giving some kind of an inspirational talk. And at the end of the talk, which I missed, everybody lined up to speak to him, and I got on the end of the line because I was finished cooking. And I got up to him, and I was just a fake person. I was just a social, silly clown person. And he noticed that. He opened his mouth and laughed at some point. I don't know the sequence exactly, but he opened his mouth and laughed, and I saw the universe in his mouth. And the universe was like a huge cathedral, and the teeth were beautiful and arranged in mosaics at the back, and organ pipes and human, you know, saints, but statues made out of teeth. I don't know about that. And then he said something to me about it's okay to be real now. And he loved me. He was loving me. He was kind. He didn't, you know, he was just kind and sweet about it. And I knew I deserved worse, but he was kind. I deserved to be punished. So, and I know that pitches right in. And then went outside and there was a forest and there was a mother. Yeah, there was a mother outside with her cubs running away, screaming in terror, and then the father bear was coming in the other direction and crossing toward me, falling lame, and his right hind leg had been blown off or cut off, and it was all bloody. That's pretty much it.
I think if you go to the next level of willingness to go into your own desert, your own unconscious, the wilderness. You know, Yeshua suggested 40 days there. I might suggest it might be a time to make a commitment to doing 5 worksheets a day for the next 40 days, really going to a new level of going into your own desert. And know that in your mouth is the wisdom. In your internally, not externally in the wilderness, you're not going to find the answer out there. You're not going to find the problem out there. You will find the strength, perhaps, the bear, the power, but where you're going to find the beauty and the truth and the structure of wholeness is inside of you.
Well, and you know, Michael, what's coming up in my memories is of my mother. My mother cried in front of us once or twice in my entire childhood. And she was very ashamed of crying and hid. And she didn't want anybody to see her cry. And I found her in a downstairs bathroom facing out the window, stifling sobs when I was in the first grade. And I got out of there. I mean, the door was open. But I got away from the door and pretended I didn't see anything. And she came out and her eyes looked like fried eggs, and I only took a glance because I knew I wasn't supposed to see that. And then she did my hair and off I went to school. But I'm remembering that for the rest of my growing up years, I would fall in love with my female teachers, which I've mentioned before, and my fantasy was that they were hurt and I could help them and help them feel better over and over and over and over again. So
that's a new level, somehow, fits
in all that. Yeah.
That sounds like a new level of comprehension around that issue that we processed several times, but a new level of seeing yourself. If I remember correctly, there was a point where you touched into that energy, and underlying everything you had judged yourself for was the desire to touch your mother.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds like a new level, right, to be intimate. And it sounds like a new level of your willingness and your ability to be touched and to come out of hiding. You know, it sounds like you got the message from Mom, you know, big girls don't cry and we don't show our weakness. Yes, we are wounded, we are damaged, but we don't let anybody see it, including ourselves. And I'd invite you to just step into the safety of embracing everything that's in you, everything that's there, and that the wisdom. You know, a lot of times people are looking for the guru. It's somebody out there in some ashram somewhere. The guru isn't out there. The teacher's in here.
Yeah.
It's in your own mouth. It's the wisdom that will come out of your own mouth that will heal you.
Thanks.
And exposure. Well, how about a mind shifter?
Yeah. Okay. My pencil.
Self-exposure. Self-exposure.
Okay.
Especially to myself. Is totally safe and pleasurable.
Okay, I bet it.
Self-exposure, comma, especially to myself, is totally safe and pleasurable.
Well, okay. Yeah, stuff is coming up. Okay.
And where Mom could only bear, it sounds like bear, interesting word to put in there, the looking at her own sadness, weakness, self-deprecation, whatever that was about, those tears you saw, could only do that in secret. And it's probably an old family secret.
She is lonely.
But the structure for wholeness is going to come up. Yeah. Well, when you look at the way you spoke about what you deserve, you know, oh, I didn't deserve this good treatment. What? What? You're the offspring of the Creator and you don't deserve good treatment? Who have you projected that one on? Who have you accused of not treating you the way you know you shouldn't be treated? Gets a little convoluted.
It does. In fact, I'm confused. I can't follow that.
Confusion's a powerful step in the healing process.
Can you say what you just said again, Michael?
I don't know. That was so long ago. But I'll try. So the whole thing of self-exposure and, you know, that false thought, like in the dream, here it is. He's being very kind to me, but your thought is, but I should be punished. I don't deserve this.
Yeah.
And my question was, how often when you've been in that space of self-deprecation, when you've been in that space of self-condemnation, have you denied, dissociated, and talked about someone else as being the problem in your life? I remember working with, this is a different circumstance, but just how subtle the mind could be. I was working with a woman who was having some conflicts with her husband, and she just caught herself, like, just kind of in the nick of time. She was in an intimate situation with her husband, and she found herself fantasizing about another man in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And she caught herself, and it was just like, oh, my God, I'm so disgusted at myself. And instantly, and this is what she caught, as soon as she, you know, found herself being so judgmental of herself, what her mind did was turned around and was all of a sudden she's thinking about wondering whether or not he's cheating. So here she is. She catches herself in her own mind cheating, and almost instantly, the minute she condemns herself for that, oh, is he cheating on me? So notice that you know the truth, that you are made of God stuff. You are the offspring of love. And yet there are thought disorders that say, I don't deserve that. I deserve to be treated poorly, badly, punished, whatever it is. And it might be useful to look at times. Remember, the taking your mind back to the moment where the error occurred is a function of forgiveness. You might look at times when you made that instant turnaround and you were upset or enraged or wanted to blame somebody else. Start doing some worksheets on memories like that and see where you go with what does it uncover that's been projected into your brain's image of someone else. In this case, this woman's got thoughts of infidelity and she totally dissociates from it and projects it into her brain's image of her husband. And, you know, literally a picture in her mind comes up of, you know, her husband cheating. So have there ever been times when you've been self-deprecating and gone into some form of hostility, that little rage thing that you're looking to clean up? And to look at times when you've projected that on someone and do some worksheets around that, and that may clue you back in, that may key you back into the core of that issue. Does that make sense?
It does and it doesn't. I've gone into a kind of a numb state. Sorry.
Good. Then breathe. The best thing you do right here is just to breathe, and we'll stop and breathe with you. So let's just let the breath move for a moment or two. And remember that confusion is a sign that it's a good thing. If you're doing the right things, confusion is a sign of healing in process. If I'm pouring truth in and lies come forward, when the two mix and meet, there's going to be confusion. As I keep pouring truth in and dissolving, forgiving the lies, then the confusion will disappear because the conflicting energy has been dissipated. And it's most powerfully dissipated by the active presence of love, and that comes with the breath. So to let whatever needs to come and to remember to keep your breath moving and hold to conscious, active, present love. When hostility or fear meets conscious, active, present love breathing, hostility or fear is gone. It's going to dissolve. There's the transmutation of the energy.
Bill, why did you want me to repeat the dream?
Because I wanted to comprehend it on another level. The first time around, there were pieces of it I didn't really get. Maybe I was in process kind of thing, so I didn't really grasp it as it relates to your energy. So I wanted to go back and revisit it.
Okay. I'm glad I clarified that because I drew my own conclusions.
Let me take a guess at what your conclusion was.
Okay.
Did it have something to do with you?
Your thought about me, a thought you would have about me, yeah.
Oh, and what was that projected thought about you that you thought I would have, that you were having?
That you thought I was making it all up and I was lying and that I wouldn't be able to remember it.
Oh, wow. That's quite a turnaround. That's really, now there's the wisdom coming out of your mouth. My words fly out, my thoughts remain. Just watch, look at that. So notice that this whole issue of self-deprecation has to do with you being accused of dishonesty. I mean, I couldn't fathom linking dishonesty to the conversation in any way, shape, or form in a million years.
That's why I asked.
But you just,
because I didn't think
you
so.
Just revealed. Yeah, you just revealed a piece of this puzzle to yourself with your words.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps that would be a worksheet on being caught or being accused of dishonesty. And maybe a mind shifter as a child.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
A mind shifter as a child.
Mm-hmm.
The more I lied, the more everyone cherished and honored me.
Whoa.
You breathing?
No. Thanks for reminding me.
Take a breath. So this is probably an important key in the whole process is honesty and dishonesty, or being seen as having integrity.
Wow. Another memory popping up.
Yeah. Breathing with you.
It all translates into I'm bad. And my grandson Luke, his father called him evil, and he kept asking me, am I evil? Am I evil? There's something going down through our generations. It's so bad. Anyway.
Well, probably a great assignment for you would be to really spend time with him and letting your intuition really guide you so that you can open the space to, through the use of words, show him that evil is a thought that doesn't even relate to him as a being, and help to free him of that. It doesn't even relate to him as a being.
Okay.
Breathing with you.
My grandfather, my mother's father, didn't trust me. It was just one incident. But he was my mother's father. So there's something
right.
going on there, too.
Was he a strong authority figure in the family?
He came to live with us toward the end of his life, and my mother had a hard time with him there because he was cantankerous and ornery and demanding. And it isn't like Jeannie's dad, who is physically compromised. He was strong, but he was very limited. He became like... My mother used to say he's got hardening of the arteries of the brain.
Right.
He didn't have what you recognize as dementia, but he was very opinionated and judgmental. Hardening of the attitudes. And there was only one incident. This is the weird thing. This is what is so amazing about little kids. One thing.
One, that's all it takes.
Just hurts so much. But,
well, and notice that it's not the thing that hurts. It's what your mind did with the thing that hurts. That's where the pain comes from. To think the thing hurts, remember, is denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me. So it wasn't the event that hurt. It was what your mind did with the event. So, Grandpa, go ahead.
He thought I was dishonest it was a little incident where I was inspecting a lapel pin on his jacket in his bedroom where I was supposed to be taking a nap. And I looked up and the door was open. He was standing in the doorway staring at me as if he knew I was going to steal that pin. And I was just curious. I was a little kid messing around.
Sure.
But it was like he shot me in the chest. But my thought was, somehow I had no defense. I am a dishonest, bad little kid. And that has a history, doesn't it? If I was secure in myself, maybe I wouldn't even remember that.
Yeah, and if he hadn't been a dishonest man, and perhaps the source of that energy genetically for you, things would have been different.
I don't know.
So in the ideal... No, well, if a small child investigating something gets that kind of response from a full-grown adult, my offering would be that the full-grown adult has that issue that they're projecting into the brainstem of the child, or to the child.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Romans, beware you who judge another, for then which you judge another, you have been guilty of practicing.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, he could have been, I suppose. This never occurred to me. Yeah, but you're right. I understand.
So it might be a good space to go into a process with him and have a conversation with him about that.
Okay,
it'd be open space for him to process. Yeah.
All right.
And it might be a good time to go back and listen to the modeling that Magda did when she did that work around her grandfather.
Oh, I remember
and back
it so well. Mm-hmm.
And open the space, give permission for that sort of communication and process to happen with him. You know, you've got the advantage of you've actually been in his physical presence and, you know, experienced life with him where she didn't even know him. He was gone,
yeah,
as I recall. So...
Thanks, Michael.
Breathing with you, young lady. I admire the depth and the level at which you're willing to do your work. It's awesome. It's an inspiration for everybody that listens to build the brain cells and to get the real application of the work and how it really works. So that's awesome.
40 days of 5 worksheets a day? Whoa.
That would be my invitation.
Yeah, I hear it. I hear it. I'm going to go for it.
Sweet. Awesome. And no sugar, too, right?
No sugar. Absolutely no sugar. And I'm much better. But, Michael, I have been tired. I mean, I have great energy in the morning. And then I'm just so tired in the afternoon for a while. And I'm associating it with the work, that it's part of a healing crisis sort of thing. I'd like to think
so,
instead of old age.
Yeah, you may very well be heading into a healing crisis, and old age has got nothing to do with whether you have vitality in your body or not, but I know I've had healing crisis over the years that, I mean, literally laid me in bed for 2 days, 3 days.
Wow.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you so much. There's a lot. I've taken notes. I've got the whole shebang right in front of me.
It might be fun. I think it would be productive if you went back and listened to this dialogue while you had your notes in front of you. I think there'll be some refinements for you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Sweet. Nice work, young lady. That's awesome.
Listen to archive. Okay. I want to make a little teeny report about my friend with Alzheimer's. We had our Zoom call.
Yes.
And Alzheimer's is very strange. She kept clapping and rocking back and forth and laughing at whatever we said as if she was taking part and understood. But some of the things we said weren't funny. So I thought she was putting on an act of being part of a scene and showing her competence, somehow knowing it was lacking. I'm just imagining, because I don't understand about Alzheimer's. She won't speak. The only word she said was yes at one point, and we all noted it and said, wow, you said a word. But on the other hand, she couldn't say anything or wouldn't. So we all told about our lives and showed pictures on the screen share of ourselves in college and then our families and various things. And her young son, and Jeannie, this is for you, because her young son has taken charge of her, and she's living in a memory care unit, but he has her over 2 or 3 days a week for the day, and he watches out for her. He's a young father with a one-year-old child and a career, and he's working from home. And he was mentioning, you know, without great emotion, saying, I've been feeling great pressure about taking care of my mother. There's a lot of responsibility on me in my life, and I have to go out sometimes for a couple of hours and go. He's a professional skateboarder, interestingly enough, and a professional in other ways. That's where he earned his living, but he's been on films as a skateboarder. Very agile young man. And all I sent him the news about your coconut oil, Michael, and how he should try it. He doesn't answer emails. It's like they're too heavy. While he's on the Zoom calls, he's very open. But I wanted to say to Jeannie, as I said to him in a subsequent email, I said, take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. Give yourself time. Don't go visit your mother all the time. She may not even remember. How much does she know? Is it okay? It's okay if you take time for yourself. And I'm saying that to Jeannie because I have a feeling Jeannie's going to clutter up her thinking in her house with more worrying.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, I spend a lot of time encouraging Jeannie, so thank you for supporting me in that, in taking care of herself. Like 2 days ago when we went out to the garden and she overdid it by a big, you know, by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, why don't you call a chiropractor this morning and go get an adjustment to get that taken care of? She's been working through some stuff with the neck, and she did. It's like, yes, good work, honey. And on the way back, she stopped, and they loaded a 50-pound bag of a nutrient for the garden in her car. And when I got up to the car to help unload, she picked it up. Now, here, she had taken it, some of the plants, and overworked herself, overloaded her body, had to go to, and an hour later she's hauling a 50-pound bag. So I'd support you encouraging her on another level to go, oh, this means I actually take care of my body and myself. Right, sweetie? Right, sweetie?
Yep.
Good. Are you breathing?
Yes, I am.
I'm good. Well, I'm breathing with you, sweetheart.
Jeannie, you're a good egg, Jeannie.
And what you were saying also about, you know, telling him he didn't have to go see her every day, I have started taking one day a week that I do not go see Dad. And I really have to do some work around feeling guilty about not going to see him, but I have been doing that.
One day a week, big deal, Jeannie.
I know.
You're good, though. I know what you mean. Yeah. Okay.
Holding the space. So, any other thoughts for you, young lady?
No, thanks. I'm sitting in the soup of it all. So thank you, Michael.
Well, remember that when you're in the soup, the fuel for healing is to continue breathing, to continue cultivating your relationship with active present love.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. So being in the soup is a wonderful place. You've got to be careful your mind doesn't jump in to try to figure it out. And just let yourself be with the process, be with the energy, and move through it.
That's been the best permission, is to turn off the non-being mind, because my mind is big on figuring out, as you know. And it's been, you said something. I wrote it down. I hope I can remember what it is. What's the next level? Be honorable to me, be supportive to me, and be respectful. But you said something about, no, I don't have it in front of me. You said something about letting the stuff appear. It'll come. And I don't have to find it or work on it or even know the stuff. That's
just
great.
Being willingness. And it may never become cognitive. If all you do is you be in the soup and you process it energetically, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a space where, you know, it might be 2 days or 2 months or 6 months later, you're just, you know, walking up the driveway and all of a sudden you have this insight. And, you know, your mind doesn't relate it to anything, but it's actually the insight that was there as a result of that place where all you did was breathe through the energy that you uncovered and processed. And when it was time, it comes to fruition. You can trust that. I mean, you can take it to the bank. You know, it's like if you're willing to turn it over to Rukka, anything and everything that could possibly happen in this field of energy called humanity will be handled by that, period.
Mm.
There's nothing too big, nothing too serious, nothing too traumatic, nothing too degrading, nothing too horrible. If I'm willing to breathe and be with it, remember, Rukka is she who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth, and she'll do it.
Mm.
Now, if I'm not in willingness, like, oh, well, I have to keep this little bit of hostility to protect me, then, well, okay, go for it. But notice that you're cherishing that little piece of hostility, and that means that it will not be removed from you. It will not be forgiven. So just in that willingness to, you know, like, I trust, and it may not resolve today or tomorrow or next week or next month or a year from now, but you can trust that it will all resolve. Just be with it.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Awesome. We appreciate you a lot.
We appreciate you a lot, too. You're bad, bad guys down there. All right. Thanks, Michael.
All right. Holding the space for you.
Thanks.
Lots of love. Take care. All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, any other thoughts for you, sweetie?
No. That's all I can think of.
So do we have anything
no
happening
hands
in the chat
up,
room or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Well, somebody's out there that's got to have. After the depth that Susan just went and the agility with which she went there. And, you know, I think the wounded bear is getting healed and, you know, stepping into the wilderness is an important place to go. And it's and the wilderness, of course, is a place where you can't figure anything out. You got to just give up figuring it out. And you have to be with it. And so... thank you for that modeling, Susan. What a gift to give to everybody. But I can't imagine it doesn't leave somebody with some thought, some question, some, well, what about? Or so if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, through the magic of technology, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know that you want to have a conversation with us. And we'd love to have a conversation. That's why we're here. So push 1. I know the thoughts in your mind. I know the questions there. And if your voice is like, oh, my voice will be shaky. Okay, can you make it okay if your voice is shaky? Just share what you have to say. Then go for it. Oh, but I don't want to reveal myself. Well, give us a fake name. I don't care. Doesn't matter. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What's moving in you right now that you could use some support with, that you could use some clarification with in relationship to these tools? And, of course, if you're not using the tools, especially the forgiveness tool, I mean, it's literally for me, day by day, I'm realizing the import and the power of that tool that was given to us 2,000 years ago called forgiveness, and how it has absolutely nothing to do with this whole Greek mythology around forgiveness, that that's just pure silliness, that I'm going to let you off the hook for what's moving inside of me, as though what's moving inside of me is really caused by you. You know, again, that thought that I shared the other day, this is a life changer. What's moving inside of me is moving inside of me. Notice we've been given a culture, a language of how it's all about, you made me mad, you made me sad, you upset me, you disturbed me, you. And that leads to, literally, when we live in that language, when we live in that thought structure, and it's been going on in every one of our generations for a long time, literally the mind has to follow those instructions and generate a construct called perception. Remember, a construct called perception is nothing more than a construct. You have never seen anything with your eyes. You will never see anything with your eyes. Nobody has ever seen anything with their eyes. That's all a lie. The eye is a one-way valve. Information comes in. It's a receiver. You can't see out through the receiver. Light energy comes into the eye. Information is carried by that light energy. Whatever the information is in that light energy resonates content in brain cells. And the brain cells that fire produce this construct called perception. And we get pictures. The mind energy that you hold literally is converted to a picture in the mind. And we say, well, look what I see out there, as though it's out there. And it's not. Something is out there, but it's not what you see. It's a construct of your mind based on the content resonated by the information that came in through your senses. The eye of man has never seen anything and never will. Seeing happens with the brain. We see is a product. There's this conversion process that happens. You'll remember a few years ago, we used to live in a world where television, tell us a picture, was all done digitally, or pardon me, as analog images. In other words, you know, channel 2, channel 4, channel 6, channel, each station had their own carrier wave. That was the identifying channel. And if you tuned into channel 6, then superimposed on that carrier wave was a picture and sound. And your TV decoded the picture and sound. Now, you know, if you look inside the wires, there's no picture or sound there. It's all just vibration. But your television set took that analog picture and sound and converted it to something you could see and hear on your television. And you remember a few years ago, in its great wisdom, the FCC decided that analog was going to go the way of the dinosaur. It's gone. You're not allowed to broadcast analog television anymore. It's all become digital. And you might remember when that happened and the government said, you know, you got to keep people in that brainwash. The government said, well, if you can't afford, if you don't have a digital TV, we will buy you a converter box that you can hook up to your old TV. A digital converter. The government paid for people to have digital converters so they could keep them hooked on that TV. And what was the difference? Well, once they stopped superimposing the picture and sound through an analog image, analog just means a picture. It was digital. It's information. And so they now, same carrier wave as channel 6, but they superimpose a digital set of information that contains the picture and the sound. And you had to be able to convert that. If you didn't have a converter, the government would buy you a converter box. Well, guess what? Your brain is a converter from digital to analog. Your brain, information, thoughts, words are all information. Information that comes in through your senses, that's information. And whatever information is resonated in you by what's going on in your world, that energy moving you in response to what's going on in the world, your mind has an analog to digital converter. Pardon me, a digital to analog converter. In other words, the digital information, the thoughts that are moving you, are literally going to be transformed into a visual picture. And whatever it is that you hold as your thought, your construct, your perception is that. And if you're working with A Course in Miracles, go back and read the passage where it says, you made that world of perception up to take the place of what the Creator gave you. So we nullify the truth of what the Creator actually has given us by living in a world of perception. And the most, to me, it's the most monumental insight of 50 years of developing this work and many lifetimes that went before that, and that is the whole key is, how do you collapse perception? How do you collapse that analog image, that picture world in your brain that shows you the lie that somebody else is the cause of what's moving inside of you? And what forgiveness does is it collapses that analog image in your mind based in your mind's lies. And when it collapses in on itself, if you hold to active present love and you breathe, then that which underlies your pain perception is transmuted, is healed. Some of those images are based on such huge masses of data, we could never even start to figure them out. That's why we talk about the number one pseudo-solution. This is out of the codependence work, the codependence intensive. The number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind is, if I could just figure this out. And you can't figure it out. I don't care what you do. You can spend the next million years, and that little 9-bit space of perception shows up in, we'll never figure it out. But at any moment that you choose to, you can forgive it. And that's where the key lies. And forgiveness means, if it's not based in truth, how do you tell something's not based in truth? You're in some sort of pain or turmoil, hostility or fear. Your mind is lying to you. But notice your mind makes up a digital image of how somebody else is the reason for it. You'll notice, though, if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. What your mind shows you is always, first and foremost, true about you. It might be true about somebody else, but first and foremost, it's always true about you. And if there's pain, if there's upset and disturbance in it, then you have work to do. And we're here to support that work. And we invite you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. The world needs it. You can give it, and let's go for it. Blessings. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.